Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
And the song that she was singing was Ride On. And the reason why we picked that song, Ride On, because horses, I love horses. Also, it's my background of horses, and when my granddad passed away, that was his funeral song.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie, subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Nicole is alongside me. Good morning, Enda.
Good morning, Shane.
And Dara Smith Nocton is with us as well. Morning, Dara.
Shane.
So we're underway, lads. We're underway with the 2-0 win for co-host Mexico last night against South Africa. So, reasonable game. Not that good a game, I suppose. But Julian Quinones is the goal scorer of the first goal at this tournament, and three red cards. John Duggan was posting last night there were four red cards in total at the 2018 World Cup. So to have three in one game last night, quite extraordinary. And then a comeback win for South Korea overnight as well against Czechia. Let us know in the YouTube comments this morning if you got up or stayed up for that one, because that was a brave, brave kickoff time to be staying up. You can get in touch with the show across the show. WhatsApp us on 0879 180 180, leave a comment on the YouTube, as I said, or tweet us at Off the Ball, or email us breakfast@offtheball.com. Thoughts so far, lads?
Of the show or of the World Cup?
Well, the show is only 2.5 minutes deep.
I think you're doing a fantastic job.
So far, so good.
You almost went full Northern Ireland with the Shani Johnston.
Yes, yeah.
You pulled it out of the bag.
North of Ireland, of course.
Yeah. And north of Ireland. The World Cup last night was, I thought it was fantastic.
Yep.
It's one of those things that is like, finally we're here.
Yes.
And we're off. And I felt like a lot of people thought South Africa were really poor in this game. I didn't get that. I thought they were like, they weren't great. Trust, like, I'm not saying they were, but I thought they were better than maybe they were given credit for, particularly on the RTE coverage. I switched between RTE and ITV throughout the night. So
did you? Right. I stuck with ITV last night.
The best of both, I felt. But I thought South Africa were decent enough on the ball at times. Mexico were clearly the better side. Mexico showing signs that maybe they'll be surpassing expectations. A lot of the Mexican journalists are very down on this team going into the tournament, saying they're not going to get past the round of 32. I think they potentially might get a round of 16 in them, at least. The Azteca, the star of the show last night, though.
Unbelievable.
What a stadium. Only has 5 games, which is such a shame. None passed the round 16.
Really?
That is the absolute crime of this World Cup.
Yeah.
It's one of the most magnificent stadiums in the world.
Where's the final, New Jersey?
Yeah, New York, New Jersey.
Ah, lads. Missed the boat there.
Absolutely did.
Azteca, obviously, there's political shenanigans going on in the background to ensure that the United States gets the final. I understand all that, but still, iconic stadium. If there's a stadium I would most like to visit, it probably would be the Azteca. And see a proper game. Like, you're not going to see a better atmosphere than a Mexico opening round World Cup. Home crowd.
Yeah, they did something that is unusual in the modern sense, is that when they were renovated and they kept the vast majority of the stadium and just kind of give it a bit of a facelift and didn't turn it into one of these modern bowls. La Bombonera in South America is the one that I would like to go to most, but they've since demolished that and they're turning it into one of these modern bowls that looks nothing like the reason that the stadium was so iconic in the first place. So they've kept the magic of the Azteca for sure.
The office of the opening ceremony, I was watching Peppa Pig while the opening ceremony was taking place, so I missed this, but you were tuning in and you can give us your full review.
That was fantastic stuff.
Okay.
I would give it a solid 8 out of 10.
Right, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had a packed show. It was basically like similar to like a Super Bowl halftime show, and like they ran through different types of singers, different types of music, but it was a real show that they put on, and the best part about it was that you knew it was in Mexico and it was very iconically Mexico, and you knew that this was at a World Cup, and it almost makes you feel like the full thing, why is it not in this country, as opposed to like, now we're going to have one in the US and then we're going to have one in Canada. I'm not so sure you'll be able to pinpoint exactly. It could be anywhere when you have the US one where Katy Perry is going to be playing, or the one in Toronto where Michael Bublé is going to be playing.
It's Katy Perry, one. Is it, right?
Katy Perry's doing the US one. Michael Bublé is doing the Toronto one. We had Shakira last night, who, incidentally, stat of the tournament so far, Shakira has now appeared at more World Cup tournaments than Gerard Piqué has.
Wow.
So
it's got to hurt.
This was Shakira's fourth major tournament. She did Germany, South Africa, Brazil, and now this. And Gerard Piqué only appeared in three major tournaments. He had South Africa, Brazil, and Russia.
Okay.
Got so one that's over. The start of the tournament. But we also got a little bit of Andrea Bocelli as well.
Yeah.
Not sure what the Mexican connection is there.
No. Nope.
But it worked. I was absolutely delighted
so
to see him
as
well.
So that was the World Cup song with David Guetta. Yeah, and it was a K-pop artist. I was just looking it up.
I don't know if it's technically pronounced this way, but it's called Dai Dai. D-A-I-D-A-I.
Okay.
But I thought it was, I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I thought the World Cup song was your man Jelly Roll, maybe country singer. Yeah,
maybe you're right.
Has he just been given the boot altogether?
You're might probably be right. Maybe that was Mexico's, I don't get it.
Mexico's World Cup song.
Either way, it was shenanigans before the game. You had Gianni Infantino, always likes a bit of limelight, and he was up there beside Selma Hayek, leaving the trophy up on the podium. You had the US flag roundly booed by the Mexican fans when it appeared, and then the emotion of the Mexican national anthem as well. You could see it, that players, you know, they were all standing there, the full squad. And
what did you think about that? Everyone around the center circle.
I was just about
circle.
To say this. Yeah,
I actually thought it was kind of cool. Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe that's because it was the first game, and
I don't think they'll do it for every game. That was
I think that's the plan.
Is it right?
I think it is the plan to have at least the whole squad on the pitch for the anthems. Yeah.
Yeah, there was rumors that it was going to be the whole coaching ticket, wasn't there?
Yeah,
as well as the squad.
Yeah.
But I don't think that.
Yeah, I don't know if that works. Yeah.
But yeah, for people who didn't see it, they were crowded around the center circle. Mm. There was obviously a banner in the middle of it, but instead of the traditional lines where they pan with the camera, the only complaint I would have was, and I don't know if it was an ITV thing or if they have the world feed cameras in the same way as most people do, you could see that the Mexican players were getting emotional, and you almost want to see that, but they kept panning around to angles that wasn't actually capturing that emotion.
Yeah.
Which was a shame, because those are the pictures that stand the test of time when you look back at these tournaments. Instead, we got kind of like random shots of the crowd and shots of the Mexican players' backs and stuff like that, whereas there was grown men crying on the pitch at the national anthem because it's their home World Cup. Sort of should be capturing that.
It's going to be strange. Before the Canada games and the United States games as well, it's going to be interesting to see how they both handled the start of it. I was interested to see Gary Lineker on some American show yesterday morning. He was kind of talking about the fact that this, before every World Cup, there's always the controversy. Like in Brazil, we had people protesting over the money being spent. In Russia, they had invaded Crimea 4 years previous. Qatar, obviously human rights issues and LGBTQ+ issues there. But this one feels a bit different. This feels like, as Gary Lineker made the point, that when all of those previous tournaments with issues started, people forgot about the issues and just concentrated on the football, rightly or wrongly. Probably wrongly, but for this one, it feels like the off-pitch issues aren't going to go away too easily.
Well, we spoke about this on the show during the week, and I do think what Gary Lineker's alluding to there, and it's something that has been pointed out, is that those World Cups, once we start, they were built to sportswash those exact things, whereas America are actually using it to promote what they are doing in the country.
Yeah,
so. They're taking the complete opposite approach. We were supposed to forget about what was happening in those countries when the World Cup was on. That was the exact reasoning behind it. Whereas the US and Trump's regime are using it as a promotion device for their exact government and what the government stands for and what they're doing. So that's probably why the country itself are not going to let us forget about them. So, but it was nice having had those conversations and needing to have those conversations for one night in Mexico to be able to forget about those. And that's probably why you're thinking, why is Mexico not, like, it would be so much better if it was just Mexico doing this World Cup.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't have those issues. I also, first time it came to my mind, I'm not sure why I hadn't thought about this. Maybe there's a reason behind it as well. But the Omar Artan situation with the referee not getting a visa for the US, my mind went to him last night and thinking, could he not have reffed the games in Mexico and Canada?
Yeah, a lot of people were saying that at the time, yeah.
Yeah, and he was given the Super Cup by UEFA yesterday too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Maybe
they had the referees in place and they didn't want to swap them around, but
possibly.
Like, surely that was the easiest solution if that was something that was possible.
Yeah, bizarre stuff. Like there's nice stories off the pitch as well. I saw some videos from Lawrence, Kansas, where the Algeria team are staying, and the whole entire town of Lawrence, Kansas have turned into Algeria fans. It's lovely to see, but those stories are going to be few and far between across the tournament. It's going to be a lot of off pitch issues. Like once the action started, it was kind of, I suppose once Mexico got the opening goal, it was the release valve and the pressure valve just kind of flowed out.
Well, yeah, but then after a while, their own fans started to get frustrated with them and started to boo them at times. Now, they were booing. It was kind of difficult to decipher who was booing who because the poor South African players were getting booed all game long, which is fair enough, but it gave me kind of Brazil Olympics vibe where they just booed every single non-Brazilian
So Mexico
athlete.
Fans are the Mayo fans of the World Cup, basically, where they just round on their team.
That. You can say that, yeah. It just created a really weird atmosphere in the second half. Because, like, yeah, fair enough. They weren't pressing on. They weren't creating many chances, but they were winning at a World Cup. Like, it felt like they were, I don't know what type of crowd turned up. Maybe it wasn't the most, representative of the Mexican nation, if I'm to say it that way. But
yeah.
It was a weird atmosphere.
Yeah, I think the tickets were quite expensive for this game.
Yeah.
So you did see quite a few people in the audience that weren't Mexican fans that were in amongst the Mexican fans. That tends to happen at World Cups anyway, and it has done in recent years. Not saying it's right, but that just is the manner in which these World Cups have ended up with the ticket prices. One thing that I cannot get behind in any shape or form is the modern society tendency of people to make things about themselves. So I don't know if people spotted this when Raul Jimenez scored his goal. So this is Raul Jimenez, 35-year-old Mexican, scores at his first ever World Cup, having had a storied career for the country. He's in tears on the pitch, and the camera cuts to fans in the audience, and they're filming themselves. They've got the phone and the reason you can see it is because they're holding the phone up like this, and you can see the front of their screen, so they're filming their reaction while Raul Jimenez has done the biggest thing in his career.
Yeah.
And their first reaction is, I'm going to make this about me.
It's the influencer.
People want to know how I'm reacting to this moment.
Yeah.
And I just, it's just modern society as a whole. I just can't get behind that. That's absolutely garbage. If you're in a football stadium and you're filming your reaction to that, you shouldn't be in a football stadium.
Yeah. It's the dawn of the new age. YouTubers vlogging themselves at Premier League matches.
See, in general, I don't have a huge issue with YouTubers being at games and doing it, but it's the falseness of it. It's like I'm not sure. Maybe he's famous in Mexico. This guy, he could be. I don't know, but.
Giflano
it just seems like average people yeah. are doing this now, as opposed to you would get groundhoppers, you would get your man Away Days who goes around grounds all over the UK. Yeah. Like he's well known for that. He involves himself in the fans. He doesn't make it about himself that much. Whereas you get average people doing this now at average games and at World Cup games, and it's for their Instagram and it's for their clout, and I just can't get behind it. I'm just an old man.
You're probably being a little bit harsh. He could have recorded the goal and the celebration and then turned it around on himself by the time the cameras had come on to him,
My fear is these
maybe
people.
Maybe that's my Gen Z outlook on it, but
they all just want to see. In order to get the key moments, they have to be filming for the majority of the game. Most of these people, which they are,
yeah.
So they constantly have the camera on themselves on the pitch. It's like it's the 90-minute long video that they eventually cut into, dice into the perfect sliced edits.
I just want to know how long this guy's Instagram story was if he was doing it on Instagram. You know, you get these people and you're just tapping to get
constantly.
Through 15 different Instagram stories to get to the next one. I don't know. There another thing that popped up last night, because this would have been the group that Ireland were in. Ryan Manning was not a popular man on Irish Twitter last night.
Was he not again?
People bringing up the check again, which is very harsh on Ryan Manning. He wasn't the only player out there.
The days are longer, the calendar is filling up, and I want to feel as good as this beautiful summer weather. That's why I've been loving Grunes. It's one daily pack of gummies that covers my greens, vitamins, minerals, and even has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, so I don't need to juggle a complicated wellness routine on top of everything else. They taste amazing, they're easy to toss in my bag on the go. Plus, they're vegan, gluten-free, and HSA and FSA, eligible for reimbursement. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at grunes.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.
But also, like, some of the panelists saying that Ireland would have topped this group.
Oh, wow. Some of the panelists on RTE.
Which I can't get behind.
There's no chance, unfortunately.
We don't have the right to say that.
No. We couldn't beat Czechia, who lost.
Where do you think we would finish in that group with Czechia?
I think ahead of South Africa, to be honest with you. But definitely behind Mexico and definitely behind South Korea, actually. On the evidence of that comeback last night, they were like really good at times, South Korea, based on the highlights. But no, we would not top that group. That's ridiculous. Like that's the way we go on, isn't it? Like, but look, we're just not there. When it was 1-0 Czechia last night, when I woke up this morning, actually, it was 1-0 Czechia, and I was like, I didn't know how I felt about that. I was thinking, oh, that could have been us.
Yeah,
I was almost relieved when South Korea came back.
Yeah, but Czechia were really poor. They weren't really creating many chances whatsoever.
Set piece jobs,
just throw-ins and corners, like is modern football to an extent, but at the same time, watch how South Korea play.
Yeah, I know South Korea chances. Are small in general as a team, watching the disparity between Czechia and the South Korea players made me realize how big that Czechia team are.
They were a small team in 2002 and they got to a semi-final. Like, you know, there's, if you can just get a bit of momentum together, they were at home at that tournament, so it's a completely different ball game.
I just worry for them in the modern game, once they come up, say, up against a team like England, who probably will be very corner heavy and really focus on that part of the game, they'll struggle. They were struggling last night. Czechia probably could have got one or two more from set pieces or crosses, but
it was not enough. Krejci got the goal from a Vladimir Kufal throw in, and then the comeback goals for the Koreans. South Korean 67th minute Hwang In Byom, and then Oh Hyun Yu with the 80th minute goal to win it for them. So 2-1 to Czechia.
Celtic legend Oh there.
Celtic legend, of course.
Thomas Suchek, I'd say, put the Czechs ahead in that game as well, from a header from a free kick, but he was offside, so could have gone the other way.
Yeah,
in that game. A couple of more things that we saw in the game last night as well. New additions to World Football, which are actually coming into the League of Ireland tonight, if you want to see them also in action. So we had the new rules. The two main ones that you sort of saw at the forefront of our minds last night was the referee counting to five for throw-ins. So if the throw-in taker is taking too long, the referee blows his whistle, and then the next thing you see him going 5, 4, 3, 2, and you have to throw it. And you could see the panic set in players. They were speeding it up.
Yeah.
So it works. And then 10 seconds to get off the pitch. When I say players are sprinting off the pitch, players are sprinting off the pitch, and the Mexican players were sprinting onto the pitch. They were doing a 100-meter sprint as soon as they got on. It was great to see.
Yeah.
Really sped up the game. But the question is, what's the point in speeding up all these aspects if you're going to stop the game at 25 minutes for a water break?
Do you not believe in the water break?
It was 23 degrees last night.
So as in, it should be case by case basis, whatever the temperature is for the game.
If it's in like it's going to be in America with the heat and the humidity, absolutely fine. Absolute garbage otherwise.
I think if you're doing it, you have to just do it then. Like, it gets real technical, because what's hot enough to do it?
Suppose you just set the minimum temperature.
Is it humidity?
It's humidity, and then there's also humidity, I know there's some regulations in some sports in terms of if the stadium reaches a certain capacity, that increases the incentive to have a water break.
Yeah.
That was the case in Bilbao with the rugby. That the attendance wasn't high enough on the Friday night for the Ulster game, so they didn't do a water break, but it was high enough on the Saturday for Leinster, so they took 2 water breaks. So there's a lot of little nuances and stuff that go into it, so I don't know where you draw the line.
Yeah, altitude as well. The Aztec is a mile and a half in the sky, which probably has an impact, you'd imagine. You're not having it. As a man from the hills of Donegal, you don't care.
I'm not having it. It's a manufactured break for advertisements.
That's how it came across.
Richie Sadler, I don't know if people caught this on RTE's coverage, but he was laying into RTE for going to an ad break because they don't have to, or they don't have to take a certain period of time. Like, there are broadcast rules that they can abide by, and this discretion is advised within it. But Richie Sadler had an almighty rant when they went to an ad break, and they did not go to an ad break for the next one.
Yeah, well, there
so
you go.
So whether or not they had...
whether it worked.
Whether or not they run out of ad space, that's another question enough, but he was not happy. But it wasn't as bad as Fox in America, who ran a 4.5 minute ad break, which of course was too long, breaking the rules, and they missed some of the play.
Yeah, ridiculous.
It's crazy.
It's stupid. The red cards, lads. So Sitole gets the first red card, and he had an absolute nightmare of a game, in fairness to him, at fault for the opening Mexico goal and then a clear sending off for that foul in Gutierrez. Sorry, that was the second one, was it? Second red card. Tembezwane got a red card as well for the slap, and Cesar Montes gets the last one. Like, I don't know. Are we going to see loads of red cards at this World Cup, or what's the story? Is that a sign of things to come?
No, I think they were all red, but except for the slap.
I don't know if the slap.
I think he was just trying to get by him, and he just happened to hit him in the face.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't think it was overly cynical. A red card. I know ITV had their referee correspondent on explaining it. I don't think Ali McCoy was having it at all.
Yeah.
The first one on Brian Gutierrez, I think that's a fairly run-of-the-mill red card. He was fantastic during the night as well, by the way, speaking of the action. Like, he's playing in the Mexican League. He kind of broke forward in MLS years ago and was very highly thought of, but he didn't really push through that barrier, but he was fantastic last night, I thought. Did really well for that red card. The slap, I don't think, was a red card, as you mentioned. I think it was maybe he swung, but not to hit him, potentially. No, I'm not sure. Not. It was probably a foul by the Mexican defender in the beginning. He kind of goes to shield his run. And then the Mexican red card at the end, I thought that was a red card.
Yeah, probably was.
I think so.
He was probably trying to level the playing field a little bit as well. He was like, I don't want to be seen to be sending off two players from the
why is it a red card? Team.
I think he goes past him.
Was it a goal-scoring opportunity? But that's not
a red card.
Yeah.
See, it's not really... It doesn't matter if him going into the box is... If that is the goal-scoring opportunity, it's if it leads to a goal scoring phase of play. So he goes past the Mexican defender pretty easily there if he doesn't foul him. He's in the box and it's a square ball to tap it into the net. And I do think it's a cynical foul on purpose, not having any eyes to the ball.
Yeah.
So on the weight of it, I thought it was a fair enough red card.
I don't think I've ever seen that given as a red card, that type of foul. In that, like, because he wasn't last man. That's normally the gauge of whether it's a red card if someone's coming through on goal. But then, yeah, it's cynical, but cynical normally means yellow.
As long as there's consistency, and for the rest of the tournament they're, you know, adopting the same thing. I did feel sorry for the referee, because this whole new thing, and it is an American thing as well, where you have the referee explaining and his English was very broken, and
it was
trying his best to kind of...
It was tough.
So cruel.
Yeah, it's tough. Because that's when he signed up to be a referee decades ago, probably wasn't thinking he was going to have to speak in front of the world in the Azteca and explain his decisions in a language that isn't his first.
Wilton Sampaio was a referee. He's from Brazil.
Yeah.
Like, you could just see the fear in his eyes, and also the confusion from the South African players, because they didn't know what he was saying either.
Yeah, yeah.
So I understand why they use this in the Premier League, but why are they using it in the World Cup, where it's like a global game where you could have any sort of nationality as the referee, and on the pitch and in the stands?
Yeah.
Somewhere along the line, there's going to be a language barrier.
Don't want to complicate it, but could they have just got the referee to speak in Portuguese and quickly have someone translate? But
I honestly wouldn't have had any issue if the referee spoke Portuguese there. Yeah. Because you know he pulls out the red card. Just like, okay, yeah, that foul that we just saw on TV.
Yeah.
The player who committed that foul is getting a red card.
Yeah, because he didn't say much more than that. Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird one. I thought the headset he had on as well was interesting.
Bit is that the ref cam on
RoboCop
it?
Vibes on it.
Yeah.
It was like...
bizarre.
Yeah. There's so many new things.
They always have the game, new things at the World Cup. I like it.
Yeah.
At the last World Cup, we had 15 minutes of added time each time, which meant we got chaos at the end, which was fun. But I think we're going to see some chaos in the throw-ins and the corners with this new timing thing, because they have it for goal kicks as well. So they basically just reverse the decision. So if somebody takes too long on a throw-in, it just goes to the opposition.
Yeah.
Likewise with corners, if you take too long with a corner, you just forfeit the corner.
It's like the Hooter and Gaelic football. It was always going to cause some issues at the end of some games, and we're going to see the same in the World Cup, no doubt.
How many goals do you think we're going to see at this World Cup? So there's 104 matches. I've got the stats in front of me in terms of the rest of the World Cups, the average goals, and how many were scored in total as well.
In my head, there's an average of, say, two goals a game, which would be 208 goals, but then you have to account for extra time, so you'd probably add another 20 goals. Probably say 238, rounded up to 240.
240?
My maths was correct there.
Yeah, I think I... You're saying 240?
Yeah.
That seems pretty high.
Does it? Yeah, probably does.
But
we've never seen 48 teams.
Yeah, and I think we're back in the era of centre forwards and goal scorers. So I'd probably, you know what, I'll go 250. I'll go slightly above you.
We're going to have a couple of 6-0s.
So you're going 240, you're going 250.
Yeah, like
so
going off last night, 5 goals were scored in 2 games.
Yeah, true.
For context, I'd say I'm for some reason missing the Russia World Cup in terms of the total goals and the Qatari World Cup, but the Qatari World Cup had an average of 2.69 goals per game.
Okay.
Russia had 2.6, Brazil 2.6, South Africa 2.2.
Okay.
And famous, which is funny, it was 2.27 in South Africa, famously or otherwise a famous tournament for being low scoring was Italia 90. Mm. That had 2.2. Highest scoring was Switzerland in 1954, 5.3 goals per game at the Swiss.
The fence is just not
Swiss
there.
World Cup. There was 237 goals in Brazil.
Well, okay, so that's going to be more then, right?
232 in Germany. So
way under.
With 104 games, if you had, let's say, 2.5 goals per game, let's split the difference, or 2.4 goals per game, you're probably looking in the region of like 250-ish, 260.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We're at the tournament, so I think that would be a fairly decent return if we got 2.5 goals per game.
Can I change my answer? I think it's going to be higher than that, actually.
Yeah, I think
I'm thinking 280.
Well.
I'm thinking 280.
Before I saw the averages, I said there would be like 230.
Yeah.
So what is the average? Sorry, what was the average of the last one? 2.7
goals per game in Qatar in 2022.
2.7 by 104 games would be 280.
280, yeah. So,
and then you have extra time and stuff. Yeah, 280.
I'd say give or take 270, 280 is what we're going to see here.
We'll be stuck with it. Keep the YouTube comments coming in. There are quite a few. The people pointing at the ITV view for the backdrop of Brooklyn from their studios is quite iconic.
Looks well, yeah.
Looks deadly.
They've got a massive loft, don't they?
Yeah.
They show, they kind of show, I have to know, are they staying in it? Like, are there bedrooms where Roy Keane and Enright are staying in that loft, or have they got a luxury hotel as well?
They might have a luxury hotel as well, in fairness. Would have thought so.
Yeah, they've got a backdrop of Manhattan.
And the Brooklyn Bridge.
And the Brooklyn Bridge and the Statue of Liberty. And then they have another one upstairs again, where they bizarrely had your man from Man Eats Food, or Man, what's it called?
Man versus Food.
Versus food, yeah.
He was on as a pundit last night.
Oh.
Early doors. Now, we're talking, their coverage started at 6:15 for an 8 o'clock kickoff. So we're talking plenty of air to fill.
There's going to be a bit of that, isn't there?
Which is fair, but yeah, that hence Richmond, why I was switching in between the channels. When he was on, he wasn't exactly providing the most insightful coverage, let's say.
I don't mind that in a World Cup, you know, throw in a few of the celebrities and big name.
Any excuse to go up and go out and make a cup of tea while you're waiting.
Yeah. Keane Wright and Neville were in good form last night. It was like they were going for the jugular at half time, disagreeing with whether the keeper was at fault or the defender was at fault for the Mexico opener. Keane was adamant that the keeper should not have been passing out to the defender in that position, but I think Wright and Neville were agreeing in that the Sitoli had to have a better touch than he did. I probably agree with them. I mean, the touch was shocking,
and it's also not the pass that you're supposed to take a touch with at all. Like that, I think that's probably where Keane was approaching it, in that, like, that dead straight pass is a pass that you're supposed to bounce back to the goalkeeper, and then it's a launch, or he picks out another person, supposed to try to suck the opposition in, whereas he shouldn't be taking a touch there in the first place.
No.
Never mind taking a bad touch. But South Africa did show signs of that early doors, like they were playing it out through the back and Mexico were pressing pretty highly, and you kind of got the vibe in the first couple of minutes that they were going to get caught out with this.
Yeah.
And they eventually did. So, dangerous game to be playing against the host nation on the first game of the tournament.
I did think other than that mistake, the goalkeeper was quite good. The South African goalkeeper, thought he was very good.
Yeah.
We kept him in it at points.
Ian Wright was talking about him before the game, and he's highly rated, obviously, in South Africa. But yeah, some good, really good shot stopping, but it was just a couple of errors that came into the South Africa game. What do you reckon the population of South Africa is, lads, off the top of your head? They were talking before the game, basically, about how South African football has been let down, and 2010 should have been a bouncing board. But then again, they are competing with rugby union and cricket and other sports.
Look, I could be absolutely miles off here. I'm going to go out on a limb and say around 48 million.
I think it's more. I think 63
to 64 million.
Yeah.
I thought it's going to be way too high there, but
you would think they need to compete more with a population like that, but then they are competing. They're kind of like ourselves. Yeah, obviously, ourselves with a much smaller population, but it's far from the number one sport. Well, Mexico is 132 million.
Yeah, so I've plugged this book a couple of times because we spoke to him, but Simon Cooper's World Cup Fever touches on this. He's got a very interesting story with South Africa because his family are actually from there. The book kind of deals with the idea that his family, the Coopers, were not supporters, but they benefited from the apartheid regime because they were white. And he spoke about the history of South African football, which is really interesting. And it's essentially the fact that it's played by the poorest people in South Africa. It didn't have funding because of the apartheid regime there for so long. So the fact that South African football exists at all is quite impressive, let alone them. They've competed at 5 World Cups, I think.
Yeah, so really, really good qualifying.
I mean, that's impressive in its own, that they have managed to do that despite everything that's going on, that went on in the country and is still going on in the country. And competing on a global stage now is getting harder and harder because everything is Eurocentric. So I think that's what makes the World Cup so good. Sure enough, the South Africans aren't going to be the best team at the tournament, but the fact that they're there in any way, shape or form is the impressive part.
Yeah.
Not a huge amount of their players actually play in the top 5 leagues either. So it's kind of hard when you do come to these tournaments to get up to speed. And not that the leagues they're playing in aren't any good, but it is just a different level when you're playing against players that are the top players in the league and the Premier League and Serie A. It is a step above, but they probably do feel like they didn't kick on as much as they should have off the back of 2010, because there's obviously the magnitude of the event and the culture around it, but they won 2 games in the group stage. They beat France.
Yeah.
They actually had a really good tournament as well. So it is a shame, but like you say, tough to compete with rugby.
And still, it is, in fairness. They could still get out of that group. You wouldn't ask them getting it. They probably only need one win or a certain result against Czechia or South Korea to get through the group. No. Round of 32 would be a decent showing from South Africa, to be fair.
One really impressive part about this World Cup that people may or may not have seen is a guy who has managed to find 48 countries, 48 beers from 48 countries.
Wow.
For the World Cup. And all the more impressive, it has been pointed out that he found beers from
Qatar,
Iran and Qatar and Saudi Arabia, because Saudi Arabia does not produce alcohol, as does Iran. So he found
some bootleg versions.
He found non-alcoholic malt drinks from those countries.
Okay, fair enough.
But it is essentially what they drink as a alcohol replacement there.
Oh.
So he's going to be doing the real World Cup, and that's the World Cup of beers over the course of the tournament.
You hear some mad stories of people who have, people who walk to the World Cup or cycle to the World Cup, and then people who endeavour to visit every country that is competing in the World Cup before it starts. There's always some beautiful stories that come out from it. Do you have, you've probably gone through your predictions during the week, the dark horses?
Yeah, I didn't pick them as dark horses to win the tournament. I do think Morocco will do quite well.
I think the same.
Not only because I have them in the sweepstakes for off the ball, but I've been looking through their squad and their manager. I think they're going into this tournament slightly underrated because they have a new manager. But people are forgetting that their new manager started 3 weeks before the last World Cup as well, or 3 months before the last World Cup rather, and it's a similar case here.
Another semi-final maybe?
Potentially.
A lot of people talking about Ecuador for a quarter-final potentially, at least.
Ben was picking them up,
A couple of good players there. Pacho from PSG.
Caicedo. Yeah.
Like, what's a successful dark horse?
Yeah, like someone like Ecuador getting to a quarterfinal, I think, is a
quarterfinal. Okay.
Or Morocco maybe to a semi because they've been there before.
There was a German analyst who has predicted the last two or three winners, but he doesn't do it on football. He does it on economics. He's an economics professor in right. Germany, and he basically does it based on the three values of population, economic success, and there's a third one. I can't remember what it was, but he has predicted Netherlands for this okay. tournament. I don't know if I buy that. They do not yeah. have as strong a squad as some of the other teams. Do they have a good enough squad to get to a semi-final? Probably. So
yeah, yeah, I think.
I mean,
so.
You get to the quarter-final onwards, it's knockout football from there. So anything can happen. But I just think there's teams there like Spain and France have superstars, and I'm not sure Netherlands have those.
Do Scotland have the heart to get to? So we know that they can get through to the last 32. Like, and last 16 would be a brilliant success for Scotland. Do they have it within them to do what Ireland did in Italia 90 and get to a quarter final?
I don't think there's any doubt about that. It's probably just the, well, I was going to say the quality, but I think they've like a really, really decent team.
Mm.
I wouldn't put it past them to get to a quarter final, really. I know
David was
raising some concerns about some parts of the pitch for them that are a bit weaker than others. I think at a World Cup, it's funny. Like, you don't need a star-studded team to do well.
Mm.
You don't need 11 superstars on the pitch to succeed. You can really piggyback off two or three really good players for most of the tournament. You probably get to a point then where it's like, okay, you're not going to pass the quarter or semi-final if you're not star-studded. But I think Scotland have that, in that they have two or three really good European players at present. Over the last season or two, like John McGinn, Scott McTominay, that they have enough to beat most teams at the World Cup.
Yeah, and I think like you need a goal scorer as well.
Yeah,
Lauren Shankland is that, and he's in form, which is a crucial part going into this tournament as well. They have some really good players, and they are a team to watch for the tournament. The only thing is like. The question is, Scotland is not getting past some of the opposition. Is like, can Scotland beat Scotland here? Because they are famous for underachieving at World Cups. We spoke to George Hamilton yesterday on You Had to Be There. I don't know if you caught it, Shane, but the 1978 World Cup is the greatest example of Scottish failure at a World Cup, because they went into it and they had a team with Kenny Dalglish, Graham Souness, and Alan Hansen, who had just won the European Cup with Liverpool. That was their base for the team. They also had two FA Cup winners playing for Ipswich. They also had four of Nottingham Forest's first division winning side. And essentially going into the tournament, Ali McLeod, who was the Scotland manager, just didn't prepare anything. He didn't think he needed to. He got the option to go watch Peru before it. They were playing Peru in the first game of the group stages. And he was like, nah, don't need it. Don't need to. They lost 3-1 to Peru.
Yeah.
And then they drew 1-1 with Iran, and their game against Netherlands, ultimately then they won the game 3-2. They needed to win 3-1 to go through. So they this magnificent team went out because the manager didn't care enough to...
Yeah.
Or not that he didn't care enough. He didn't think he needed to prepare that well. But like obviously that's days gone by.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen this time around. But... since then, Scotland just can't get past the group stages. I think they'll get past the group stages this time.
They should. Their first World Cup in 28 years. So they play Haiti on Saturday evening, which is Sunday morning, 2 a.m. our time, in Foxborough in Boston. And Morocco and Brazil also in the group stage. But look, the wheels come off if you don't beat Haiti, and beat Haiti by a couple of goals. You would imagine in that group. But then if they beat Haiti, that's probably then through to the round 32.
Exactly.
Now, Scott McTominay didn't travel with the team, I see. He was not on the team bus as it arrived at their hotel in Boston. He had an upset stomach. So for safety reasons, they decided not to have him travel with the rest of the squad. But I'm sure he'll be fine for... it's a precautionary measure, and he'll be fine for that game against Haiti on Saturday night into Sunday morning. Anything else from the World Cup, lads, you wanted to touch on?
Always get power in the comments saying Senegal are a good shot for dark horses, which, again, they probably are going underappreciated going into this tournament, given what happened at the African Cup of Nations. Morocco were taking the headlines there, but there was another team in the final there, and it was Senegal, so they have a fair chance here, I think.
Curaçao and Cape Verde, or Cabo Verde, both far more organised teams than South Africa, says type in the YouTube comments. We'll see. Be fascinated to see what Curaçao and Cabo Verde do. We see in the papers as well, Martin O'Neill declared the rest is history after rubber stamping his Celtic return, confirming yesterday Celtic that the man who miraculously led the club to a league and cup double last season will again be in the dugout next term, 74 years of age. And you're a big Celt. How do you feel? It was the obvious move, but I mean,
it's a safe move.
Yeah,
I don't feel worried going into the season with Martin O'Neill at the helm. However, it's obviously not the move that you would say you'd want if you were looking to the, towards the future. Also, probably worrying signs that the club still has not announced, and it was reported yesterday that they're struggling to come to an agreement with Sean Maloney in terms of his contract and bringing him in. Same with Fotheringham, who were both probably instrumental in that double last year,
yeah,
as well as Martin O'Neill. From all intents and purposes, it seemed like Martin O'Neill was the head guy on as the manager, but it was Sean Maloney and Fozzie who were doing the training sessions and kind of being on the ground and day-to-day stuff. So it's not ideal going into a season where you're probably going to need 7 or 8 first-team players. On top of that, probably going to need even more players as backup. And you can't come to an agreement with two coaches who you think would be absolutely vital for Martin O'Neill and also probably not that expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't bode well for the season. It doesn't fill me with confidence.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that Martin O'Neill is clearly still a really good manager.
Yeah, and the obvious choice probably for next season. Just a couple of other headlines. Jose Mourinho, will probably touch on this with Richard Fitzpatrick shortly as well, but Jose Mourinho last night confirmed as Real Madrid's new manager after 13 years away following the re-election of President Florentino Perez. So Perez confirmed the Mourinho expected return in his speech after seeing off the challenge of Enrique Riquelme for that position. So an 8th term in the role, former Benfica boss signing a 3-year deal and will officially begin for the start of pre-season on July 13th. We also see in the back pages as well, there's a number of papers that touch on the Elliot Anderson to Manchester City story. Anderson moved lightly despite Forest holding out for €150 million. Man City will have to pay a Premier League record fee to land Elliot Anderson from Nottingham Forest. Forest already rejected a second bid from City for the 23-year-old, believed to be €123 million plus €17 million in add-ons. Of course, he's over with England at the World Cup at the moment. It's a lot of money, but
not like for like, but Bernardo Silva has left the club, and you mentioned Jose Mourinho there, but he has agreed to join Real Madrid as well. So Elliot Anderson pretty much replacing Bernardo Silva at Man City.
Yeah. I'm upset with you, lads.
Upset.
I made an effort this morning to wear my Mexico jumper. And he's haven't asked about it.
Dara, do you know what? I saw you sitting over there in your lovely jumper, and I was going to ask you about it. Talk to us. Tell us about your lovely jumper.
I actually have very little to say about it.
But I just
wanted to be acknowledged. Yeah,
we should have mentioned it at the top.
Small bit of self indulgence there from Darab.
Yeah,
we'll allow it because it's Friday morning.
Yeah, I don't know if I've mentioned.
I did ask him about it in the meeting beforehand. So
yes, we just forgot that it wasn't on air that particular part. Yeah. You also have South Korea in the sweepstakes.
Yeah, my boys won last night or this morning.
Look at him calling him his boys now.
Yeah, already. Yeah,
when you could hear him.
No, you couldn't.
Outside in the production box, complaining about without any mics on him when we were in here.
Where's the evidence? I've backed them the whole way. Yeah, they're my dark horses, actually.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And were they your dark horses before you got them in the sweepstakes?
Yeah.
Where, yeah,
my day ones, yeah.
With them through thick and thin.
Yeah.
Just quick story to mention on the back page of the Irish Daily Mail as well. Growing support for Keith Wood as Munster CEO. There's growing support for Keith Wood to take over as Munster Rugby CEO as the existing chief executive Ian Flanagan comes under increased pressure. Mail Sport understands that former Munster Ireland Alliance legend Wood has the backing of significant figures within the province who feel he would be the ideal figurehead to help revive the fortunes of the club after a disastrous season. Of course, saw them dumped out of the Champions Cup in the pool stages and then hammered by the Bulls in the URC. Quarterfinals, an interesting potential move there. Big weekend in Gaelic football, lads, as well. We'll touch on it obviously later in more depth with Shawnee Johnston, but how do you respectively feel about your counties, Cavan at home to Dublin in a winner takes all knockout tie in round 2B, and Donegal have the safety net, I suppose, in Ballybuffet against Cork in that 2A game. But
I'll let Dara go first here because it is a knockout game with Cavan and Dublin.
So. Yeah, it is knockout, but it's a bit of a free hit as well because Cavan haven't had the best of seasons. The game against Westmeath was a I suppose, a green shoot in ways, although it's probably not indicative of where we're at, because Dermot McCabe obviously has history with Westmead and is familiar with that system and familiar with Mark McHugh. So I don't know how much you can read into that. But some players, some of the young players that have brought in the panel over the last few games and the last couple of seasons really played well in that game. So I suppose there's a little bit of positivity around the team and the feeling that Dublin can be got at here a little bit, and obviously not playing their best stuff. But with Jared Brennan coming back on the Sunday afternoon, Pat O'Coughlin-Byrne, I see, is back on the bench. The forward line looks absolutely stacked. It might just be a little bit too much for Cavan, but and also Cavan have a bunch of injury issues as well. I see Oisin Brady just in the team there. He's actually come back onto the bench. He was a big injury concern, so that's a bit of a boost for Cavan.
It's definitely a boost.
But news that Grobe McKiernan has left the panel. He was injured, so I don't think he would have played in this game, but even just the rumours going around that he has left the panel altogether is slightly concerning in terms of the mood of the camp and things like that. But you know, as I say, it's a bit of a free hit in that no one is really backing Cavan here.
Yeah,
and
pressure's off.
They probably haven't been in a position like this to beat Dublin. Like, they've never beaten Dublin in Cavan, and or at least in Breffni Park. So this is a good chance as Cavan will ever have to beat them.
Donegal happy enough?
I think it'll be a tough enough game. Cork are quite a good outfit. Interesting, probably one to watch for this game is that Cork have not been shy of going for goals and running through defences, and I've found that Donegal throughout this season so far in the league, and you've definitely seen it against Down, is they are susceptible to running sides who try to get on the inside of them.
Yeah.
So I don't think Donegal will have it all their way. Now, in saying that, clearly Donegal are the favourites for this game, but it's nice to go into this knowing that you have another game on the other side of it, regardless.
Yeah.
Disappointing that it's not going to be on TV, particularly for the Cork fans who will have to travel up to Baba Faye if they want to see it. And Baba Faye, I think, holds 19,000 around that. So it's
a sellout, I think, already.
Yeah, so it's going to be a big enough occasion, and Baba Faye is a decent town for any Cork fans going up there. But outside of that, it's a shame that we're not going to see this game at all.
Yeah. There's a few of those games I'd love
all
to see.
All Ireland favourites outside of Armagh and Kerry are not going to be televised this week.
Yeah, it's strange.
As are Kerry.
Yeah.
Which is
two All Ireland finalists.
I do think it can't be hammered home enough. I know there's mitigation, and you have to televise something, and something has to fall by the wayside somewhere. But I do think it's an absolute scandal that we may see one off Kerry or Dublin exit the championship this weekend.
We won't see it.
We might not see it. We definitely won't see it. It might not happen that either of them go out. But if either of those teams get knocked out of the championship this weekend and we don't have it on TV,
there'll be holy war.
That's an absolute scandal.
Yeah. There'll be a lot of talk if that happens. For sure. Lads, great stuff.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.